Blog Talk Radio.
And here we are, this week. In our world, plagued by efforts to achieve fame, a moron in Florida, with no offense intended to actual morons, decides he won't behave like a Nazi by burning books and won't offend religious Muslims and others by not burning Qurans this weekend. He says he received a sign from God. Anyone want to guess what the sign said? Later, he said he'd made a deal with Muslims in New York, which they deny. A federal appeals court in Washington, D.C. ruled today that federal financing of embryonic stem cell research could continue while the court considers a judge's order last month that banned the government from underwriting the work. Is it possible that scientists won't be burned at the stake? And a Hazleton, Pennsylvania Hazleton, Pennsylvania law that would revoke business licenses of landlords who rent to and employers who employ illegal aliens is unconstitutional. The law essentially said that if a business or landlord did business with illegal aliens, they could have their business license revoked and therefore no longer be able to do business within the city. The law in Hazleton, Pennsylvania was a model for many other states' laws, and now it's been ruled unconstitutional. New jobless claims fell to a two-month low, and the stock market rallied. Welcome to a reporting of possibly meaningless statistics. Another statistic that was reported today as good news may not be, specifically that our trade deficit has improved. That would be okay, but it improved for the wrong reason. On the other hand, last week there was an increase in job production in the private sector. And Philo Sarrazin, 65, resigned from the board of Germany's central bank after pressure was brought following his comments that Muslims in Germany were lowering the national intelligence ranking and that Turks and Arabs were exploiting Germany's welfare programs. He also said that all Jews share a particular gene. Now, that last remark is true, though incomplete. All Jews share a genetic background with each other and everyone else. He resigned saying he couldn't put up with the pressure and that he'd now concentrate on things important to him. Don't you long for the days when bigots at least had the decency to say that they didn't mean what everyone thought they meant? Quote, because of Chelsea, California children will be safer, close quote. According to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. He said, because of Chelsea, this never has to happen again. The law he's referring to says that anyone committing a violent sex crime against a child will be sentenced to life without possibility of parole. The Gov suggests that a law will make a sex offender not commit a sex offense. And no one commits murder because if they do, they may get the death penalty. In tech news, Best Buy, the electronics retailer that didn't go out of business, says that they'll begin selling Amazon's Kindle in the fall, so they'll be available for the holiday shopping season. They also sell the Nook e-reader and Sony's electronic reader. Presumably, shoppers will be able to compare the readers and make a decision. To see why you might prefer a Kindle, I'll tell you in a minute why, besides its cheaper price, the reason that you might, in fact, prefer a Kindle. Speaking of economics, as we were earlier, an airline in Europe, Ryanair, is suggesting that they can save money and reduce ticket prices by eliminating a co-pilot. The flight attendant could be trained to fly the plane in the event of an emergency, he says. The idea would be that the pilot could ring a bell and the flight attendant would come in and fly the plane, which is great unless he passes out or dies of a heart attack with no time to ring that bell. Of course, this is the same executive who suggested a reduced price for passengers willing to stand up during flights. He also suggested pay toilets on planes. Of course, if you carry quarters with you, they might charge you for extra weight on board. A new study suggests that vitamin B supplements could halt shrinkage of the brain found in some of the elderly with dementia. Now, if they could just remember to take the pills. Good news and bad news on books. The Wall Street Journal is about to start a book review section. That's the good news. The bad news is that this is a newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch. That's right, he's the same guy who owns Fox so-called News. In Houston, a volunteer organization devoted to reading printed material for the visually impaired is now recording Playboy magazine and describing in great detail the photographs, including the centerfold. Taping for the Blind, Inc. has a woman reading the articles and the jokes and doing the descriptions of the naked women. First, these recordings are not available to the general public. Now, that's public with an L, so don't ask. Also, I'm not going to say anything which may be correctly construed about the possible relationship between Playboy magazine and the onset of blindness. No, I'm not going to. Don't ask me to. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, and our guest Morgan St. James to speak about her new book. We also have This Day in History. Before we go back to the news headlines and discuss those a little more, I wanted to mention to you why it is you might prefer the Kindle, and I have a bias. If you go to Amazon.com and in the search modality put my name, our producer is growling in the background, if you can hear that, I apologize. But if you go to Amazon.com and in the search box put either my name, Jeff Bushman, or you put in the name Mobile Millionaire, which is my book on the subject of mobile home investment for the small investor, my book will come up, and it is published in Kindle version only, and as opposed to a printed book. So that's the reason for my bias. But not just my book, but a number of books are now being published in Kindle editions exclusively, and with you can't read them with the other e-book readers, including the wonderfully named Nook e-reader. So you can read it with the Kindle, and as I say, many other books, including a number of books that have been put into Kindle format that are public domain books, older books, such as Walden Pond, Alice in Wonderland. A number of those books can be read in Kindle edition. But additionally, you can also download from Amazon.com's site a PC application, obviously for your personal computer, whereby you can download either the public domain books free or by paying a price for a book anywhere from $2.99. Some of them are less expensive, some of them are more expensive. Mine's $2.99, by the way. You can then download those to your computer and with the Kindle Reader, read them. It's a very neat device, so either you may wish to buy a Kindle or you may wish to just download the application to your computer. Unless you have a netbook, of course, you can't carry it around like a book or like you could with a Kindle reader, but at least it's available on your computer, and the price for that Kindle reader is zero. Okay, moving back to our headlines, person in Florida who was going to burn Qurans now says he won't, and now, during the day, he changed his story. Initially, he said he got a sign from God. There is a comedian whose name I can't remember at the moment who talks about people behaving rather stupidly, and the punchline is, here's your sign. And I'm thinking, if there's a God, he may have handed this joker a sign. Although in this case, instead of being, I'm an idiot, might have said, stop being such a, fill in your word. Then later in the day, the story changed, and it became that he had made a deal, not with Monty Hall, but with the imam in New York who wants to put a center for Islam, including a mosque, about two blocks away from the World Trade Center, which has created all this opposition on the part of Sarah Palin and other intellectual giants, and that the deal was that the center would be moved in exchange for the Qurans not being burned. The imam responded to reporters' questions by saying he's never even talked to the guy, and he wouldn't move it as a barter tool. So apparently this gentleman not only gets words from God, he gets words from people who have never spoken to him. But one of the more interesting things as I view it, outside the issue of the harm that this man would probably cause to Americans in other countries, including our soldiers, sailors, etc., is that no one's brought up the fact that I've heard of, that is no one well-known or in political position to make mention of it, has mentioned the whole idea of burning books, never mind that it's a religious book of Muslims and the holy book of Islam, but burning of books is not an American value. And we fought a war against a power that was in the habit of burning books, not the Quran necessarily, although I'm sure Hitler would have loved to have done that, but burning books with which they disagreed, that regime disagreed. This man's burning the, or was going to burn Qurans, because he thought that was a religion that was contrary to Christianity. It doesn't matter in that context that I'm mentioning why. The fact that he wanted to burn books because he disagreed with it is a sign of where his mentality is. Or as we used to say in the late 60s through the mid-70s, it shows where his head is at. We mentioned that the court, the appeals court in Pennsylvania, ruled that a local law threatening licenses of landlords and businesses was ruled unconstitutional. It was for the same reason, and using the same reasoning as the earlier federal district court. This is not the same law, and one ruling does not directly affect the other. But it was the same reasoning that Judge Bolton used at the federal district court level that covered Arizona with regard to SB 1070, Arizona's law that was designed to give Sheriff Joe Arpaio free rein to abuse immigrants or people who look like they might be dark. But the law in Arizona was ruled unconstitutional by the federal district court, which is the basic trial level of the federal courts. This was a federal appeals court ruling stemming from a ruling of a district court in the area governing Pennsylvania. That said, while this doesn't affect SB 1070, what's interesting is there is a law in existence in Arizona that preceded by several years SB 1070, which effectively says the same thing, except that it has the word knowingly, but other than that, it's not really any different. It says that if you're a landlord and you knowingly rent to illegal aliens, and we're referring to people from other countries, not from other planets, I think, or if you knowingly hire an illegal alien, you can lose your business license. And this ruling in Pennsylvania, though it does not have an effect on it, could be persuasive when that law, if that law gets to the courts, the Arizona law, because what the ruling in the federal appeals court in Pennsylvania, as well as the district court here, said was that it infringes upon the federal government's right, exclusive right, to govern immigration. So for what it's worth, this may have persuasive effect on the courts that will rule on that law. We talked about economic statistics that have come out. By the way, I failed to mention our phone number. If you'd like to join us, it is 347-994-3796. I'll repeat that in a second. You can join us now and talk about the things we're talking about or something we're not talking about. There is a reason the show is called Speaking of Everything, other than the fact that it's a clever title and was stolen from somebody else. But you can call in and speak of almost anything you want with the possible exception of religion, except as it relates to politics, please. The number again is 347-994-3796. I can tell you that if you quote a verse of the Bible, either Testament, or a verse from the Book of Mormon, or a verse from the Quran, I do have the power of the hang-up. So if you don't want to do that and you want to call, please feel free to do that. 347-994-3796, and in about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Morgan St. James, who will talk about her new book, written under the pseudonym Arliss Adams. And I think you'll find that discussion interesting. She was on the show before and was a very engaging and enjoyable guest. And again, if you didn't hear that, you can find out how wonderful she is by continuing to listen. We talked about the economic statistics. New jobless claims fell to a two-month low, and the trade deficit was reduced. So let's talk about those. The new jobless claims falling to a two-month low is terrific if you are one of those people who thought they might be on the verge of being unemployed. Beyond that, it is one of these bumps and valleys that we've been saying for over a year is going to continue happening, because unemployment will really go down and go down on a sustained basis if and only if the rest of the economy recovers. The good news is that a good many indicators in the economy are positive. One that came out today was our trade deficit. The trade deficit measures how much more we buy in dollars than we sell in other countries in dollars. So just as a quick example, and one that is not designed to insult your intelligence, and if it does, I apologize, is if we buy $1 million worth of goods from overseas and we sell $3 million worth of goods overseas, we have a trade surplus of $2 million. If we buy $3 million worth from various countries altogether and we sell only $1 million, we have a trade deficit of $2 million. Well, the trade deficit is actually in the billions, but my eyes tend to glaze over when we start talking about billions, and I assume yours might as well, in terms of understanding meaning to those numbers. The important thing to know is that for many, many years, we've been buying much more than we've been selling in dollars from and to foreign countries. So the trade deficit reduced to a substantial extent in this last month on which they reported. Now, if that was because we sold a bunch of stuff overseas, we were manufacturing a lot of things and we sold a bunch of stuff, that would be great. In fact, we do sell a bunch of things overseas and a bunch of products and services. But if the trade deficit went down because we were selling vastly more to other countries, that would be great. The real reason the trade deficit went down, if you dig a little deeper in the numbers, which they only reported on tangentially today, is because we are buying less from overseas. The reason we're buying less from overseas isn't because we're buying so much more domestically, but because many people don't have a lot of money to buy products and services. So we're buying less from overseas as well as buying less from domestic sources. We're still selling things. In fact, one of the items that we sold a lot of and which we always sell a lot of overseas is airplanes. And so thank goodness for the airplane manufacturers, but we are still buying less from overseas primarily because we're not spending money. Okay. I mentioned one of the governors of the board of Germany's central bank having resigned because people realized that he was kind of a neo-Nazi and he couldn't bear the pressure. This is the second, person of renown, celebrity, who in the last few weeks has expressed bigotry, and instead of apologizing for expressing bigotry, complains about other people trying to shut them up. So no one's going to shut up this fella, unfortunately, and no one's going to shut up Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura had the audacity to claim her First Amendment rights were being abridged, meaning that, among other things she hasn't read, she hasn't looked at the Constitution of the United States. But the reality is that these folks are exercising free speech, and so are the people who criticize them. I was going to say that's because it's America, but of course it's not America and Germany. If you look at World War II and you look at the United States, you could argue under some circumstances that it might be Germany in America, but it's not America and Germany. And if you follow that, you're a better person than I am. Okay. And you might be anyway. The gentleman whose name is O'Leary, who heads up Ryanair, is the fellow who suggested that if you wanted to travel on their airplanes and were willing to stand up and hold on to handrails during the flight, that you could be charged less money but still fly. But the real advantage is they could fill more planes. That is, they could fill planes with more passengers, thereby reducing their own cost per passenger mile, which is a clever idea. But this is one of those examples where clever and stupid can occur at the same time. I can't imagine a lot of people would want to stand on an airplane, even if it's only a 30-minute flight. The fact that you may have turbulence could take your shoulder out of its socket, or your arm out of its socket. My anatomist is nearby. It's the arm out of the socket. Yeah, okay, your arm out of its socket. Additionally, he was also the one who came up with, when he was told by aviation experts that the standing room only airplanes might not be the world's safest idea, he suggested a vertical seat. No, I'm not kidding. The idea is that you would have a vertical seat. I'm not making this up, okay? You'd have a vertical seat, and you'd be belted into the vertical seat so you couldn't be thrown from your seat during the course of the airplane flight. And again, you would be able to fit a lot more seats, if you want to call that a seat, into the airplane. So there you go. So that was his idea, too. What I like, though, is the rather clever idea of the pay toilets on airplanes. See, if you're traveling around and you're someplace where you run into a pay, not only run into, but if you happen upon a pay bathroom and you don't want to use the pay bathroom, if you, how can I put this? If you don't need to use a bathroom immediately, you can wait and choose to use a free one somewhere. And in some states, by the way, they've outlawed these devices. And, of course, as you all know, there is a country singer who was named after what you use to use a bathroom for which you must pay. I'll come back to that in a minute while you try to figure out who that is. But the fact is that that if you're on an airplane and you need to use the bathroom and it's a pay toilet, they could charge you $20 and you would either have to use that or ask for one of the empty soda cans that they've poured out of. In the meantime, the singer I was referring to, if you think of another name for a bathroom, it'll come to you immediately. What you must use in a pay bathroom, of course, is Johnny Cash. Okay, moving ahead. That's actually from a very old joke, and it will also stay very old. I promised we would do News of the Weird. We only have a couple of minutes, and this day in history, we're not going to have time for that because Morgan's going to come in to our phone lines. But just wanted to suggest that the finance minister in Russia has urged people to step up their intake of vodka and nicotine. This would be more of a story if it were the health minister, but it was the finance minister, and the reason, of course, is because both items are heavily taxed. Wanted to talk very briefly, and as you can tell, we're kind of rushing through, because when she calls in, we want to take her right away. But one of the things we wanted to talk about was this day in history, or this week in history, more correctly. And this week in history, Switzerland became the 190th member of the United Nations. That was only a few years ago. It was in 2002, as a matter of fact, only 8 years ago that Switzerland became a member of the United Nations. And if you think about world history, you'll understand why they waited so long. It's not because they were blackballed or anything. The reason is that Switzerland always wanted to remain neutral. Their concern was always that if they became members of the United Nations, they might contribute or might have to be called upon to contribute troops to peacekeeping forces, and that would make them a non-neutral and potentially a target. Also this week in history, specifically it would have been yesterday, September 8th, a hurricane struck Galveston, Texas, killing 8,000 people. That was in 1930. I'm sorry, that was in 1900. And in 1935, a Louisiana senator, Huey Long, who had also been a governor, also known as the Kingfish, was shot and mortally wounded. In 1951, on September 8th, the peace treaty was officially signed, ending the war with Japan. That didn't occur until 1951, which was a wonderful year. And now if I click this right, and I didn't, if I click it right this time, there we go, joining us will be Morgan St. James. Are you there, Morgan?
I am.
There's always a scary moment when I click on that button on the page, and I don't know if someone's going to be there when I say, hello, are you there? And they
right, or somebody says, hey, what do you want, Charlie?
Yeah, that's right. One of these days, someone's going to say nothing, just to throw me off. And,
well, let me tell you, I'll give you your little levity for the day, Jeff, since
please.
We laughed so much last time.
Yes.
Today, my article on examiner.com was about proofreading. And
yes.
Yes, I did what I told you. I dialed the wrong number.
You did what now?
I dialed the wrong number.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
there you go.
And the man answered, and he sounded sleepy, and he said, hello? And
yeah.
I said, but I proofread. I asked him if I had the correct number and reeled it off, and he said, no, you've dialed one digit wrong.
Well, if that man is listening, which is highly unlikely, apologies. for having a number close to yours. But it would stand to reason that some people would be asleep now in the area code which you called, because the area code for the show, call-in, is 347, which is in New York State.
Oh, okay.
You and I are both in the western part of the country.
Right.
Therefore, it's, much earlier, and I know that there are some people in New Jersey and along the East Coast who are listening and staying up late for us, and thank you for that, not to mention those who are listening in the archive edition. But the fact is that, it is kind of late. If I were on the East Coast, I would be asleep, which would make doing the show a little more difficult, but I'm willing. I wanted to tell our audience that you have written a number of books under your own name, Morgan St. James.
Right.
And if people want to see those, among other places, they could go to Morgan St. James, all one word, and that's Morgan St. James, -author.com. And I should mention again, Morgan's been on the show before. She is the Vice President of Sisters in Crime for Southern Nevada, and editor of On the Prowl. That is their publication, correct?
Yes, right. That's our monthly newsletter. A little project that started out to be 4 pages, and now it's about 20 pages every month.
Okay, and she also writes a column for TheExaminer.com, Las Vegas edition, and she is now writing under the name, additionally, I should say, writing under the name of Arliss Adams, and it's a couple of books of hers under that name that bring us here. One of them is Devil's Dance, which was released in August, and I want to read to the audience, if I may, from one of the reviews. Here it is. This is from an author of a couple of other books by the name of Gay Tolfel-Kinman. She wrote, "I don't know whether this book is based in fact, but it could be. And may the devil get his due for the dance he performed over a young, beautiful, and talented ballerina. Although the books can be read separately, don't shortchange yourself by reading only one of them, as one is only part of the shocking and intriguing story of a woman who discovers strengths she never knew she had or would ever need." And the two books she's referring to are Devil's Dance and The Devil's Due. The first one was released last month, and the second one, it hasn't been released because it is now September, and I know it was due for September release.
Yeah, the second one, we actually pushed it to October 1st because the audio book is going to be released in November, so we wanted to make the release dates closer.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about the two books and why you chose to write them under a nom de plume, or more correctly, a nom de computer.
Well, you did that better than I would. I murder the French language something
Me
awful.
Too. Well, if you're saying I did better than you did, there are people who are listening who may speak French who are now imagining what horror you may be doing to the language since I massacred it. But go ahead.
Yeah, horror.
Tell us
horror is the word. And by the way, Jeff, all of my books can be found on Amazon and Barnes & Noble Online, Books a Million, just about every website there is that carries books. Carry my book. And if you can't find them under the title, you can always put in either Morgan St. James or Arliss Adams, and they'll come up.
Let me ask you a question. Are any of these books, any of your books, also available? Well, I guess at Barnes & Noble, they would also be available in the Barnes & Noble stores.
Well, they can be
ordered.
Yeah, they're not currently stocked in the brick-and-mortar stores, although Barnes & Noble has the two new Devil books under consideration right now.
Okay.
But they can be ordered in any brick-and-mortar store. They are distributed by a distributor called Ingram that most bookstores order from. So there's no problem. If somebody, you know, prefers to go to their neighborhood bookstore or to a Barnes & Noble, they can just give them the ISBN number or my name or the name of the book, and they should be able to find it and order it.
Very good. So first off, why did you decide to write these books under a pen name?
Well, you know, it really was a big decision, Jeff, because I hadn't originally considered that at all. And I'm active in 6 different writers' groups between L.A. and Las Vegas. And so I have lots of cooks in the soup giving me advice and people who have done the drill before. And because of the difference in the type of content, everybody was advising me to write it under a pseudonym because they said, you know, I've kind of built a reputation for funny mysteries and quirky, you know, quirky comical things. And these books aren't quirky and comical. And the feeling was that if somebody picked it up because of my name, they'd be expecting something funny. And it would be that. These are emotional books. their romantic suspense, and they're the beginning of a series. The name of the series is the Twist of Fate series. And the same protagonist will not necessarily appear in all the books. Her story is pretty well told by the end of The Devil's Due, but her sister will appear in the next book. And then any book in that series will have to do with something that was influenced by fate.
Okay. And very good.
Yeah, so that's kind of, but now I know what it feels like, I think, a little bit, not really, but, you know, I've gotten a little taste of what it's like to be a little schizophrenic, because, and seriously, no insult to people who really do suffer with this. My sympathy is with them. But now I have two different homes, and two different names, and two different looks, because the image for Arliss Adams has a big mane of auburn hair, and I'm a blonde.
So there you are.
So there I am.
You say you have two homes. That's right. You have one home in Las Vegas, and you also live part-time in the L.A. area?
Right. Yeah. And I live in the Marina Del Rey area of L.A. Part-time.
Okay.
And I live in Las Vegas part-time, and as I said, I'm active in writers' organizations in both cities.
Right. So. We discussed the last time you were on the show how you had gone to the same high school that I would have gone to if I hadn't moved, and to which my brother attended, and in Los Angeles. And you probably mentioned that you live in the Marina, and I'd forgotten, though we are in the Phoenix area now. I used to live in L.A., obviously. And so we have that in common, although I've never lived in Las Vegas. At least I'm in the
desert. Well, I'm going to be doing a signing in Sedona.
Right. As a matter of fact, I was going to ask you, actually, toward the end of the show, but we can cover it now. You have some signings coming up. You have one in Sedona, and tell people where you're going to be. I believe you have
more
signings scheduled, right?
I'm going to be at the Well-Read Coyote in Sedona, and you know what? I'm totally unprepared here. I don't have the date
in
front of me.
I'm pretty sure that's November 6th.
But it's on my website.
No, I'm pretty sure it's November 6th, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
it is. It's November 6th, the Well-Read Coyote in Sedona is where you'll be.
Yeah,
and
the Well-Read Coyote is owned by a very wonderful writer named Chris Neary, and she's also a member of Sisters in Crime.
Ah, very good. And do you have any other signings scheduled, or is that still pending?
Well, let's see. I am supposed to be at the West Hollywood Book Festival, although I don't have a signing time assigned to me yet.
Uh-huh.
And if I am, if I didn't slip through the cracks, I will be at the Sisters in Crime booth. I was supposed to be at the Greater Los Angeles Writers Society group as well, or their booth, but apparently my confirmation of it got lost somewhere along the line, so they didn't have me on the list. And of course, those fill up very quickly.
Sure.
And
when is the West Hollywood festival you're referring to?
It's September 26th.
You know? Okay, so that's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, right. And then I am going to be giving a workshop on a cruise that is called Mystery on the High Seas, A Cruise to Die For. And that's with Carnival. And actually, my sister Phyllis, my co-author on the Silver Sisters Mysteries, is supposed to be on the cruise as well. And we're going to present a workshop called From Novice to Novelist and the Bumps Along the Way.
Terrific.
Because I'll tell you, we really learned a lot when we were writing the Silver Sisters.
Yeah, I'm sure, among other things, about collaboration.
Well, about collaboration, I now collaborate with various writers. I've got one other project in works right now with a different co-author. And but, you know, the thing, going back to The Devil's Dance and The Devil's Due, the thing that's been so wonderful about taking that journey and going to workshops, going to conferences, really learning my craft. I was a published magazine writer before I wrote fiction, but that didn't mean I knew how to write fiction. And I quickly learned that I didn't know how. And so I've spent the last 10 or 15 years learning how to write fiction. And when I first started Devil's Due and Devil's Dance, it was one massive volume. And this was like 15 years ago. It was my very first stab at writing fiction. And I thought you had to write a big book to get published, you know. So I just kept writing and writing and writing. And I gave the book to a, the manuscript to a friend of mine who was a forensic psychologist. His name was Mort Reed, and he also had some thrillers in publication years ago. And I said, Mort, do me a favor, read this manuscript, and if you like it, maybe you'll pass it on to your agent. Now, there's naive fiction writer, right?
Right, there you go.
And Mort gave it back to me and said, Morgan, I hate to tell you this, it's never going to get published the way it is. He said,
it's too long,
it's all over the place, it's full of cliches.
But other than that, it's perfect.
Yeah, other than that, it's, and he is from New York. Other than that, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So as I kept learning, these two books have actually been rewritten 7 times. And each time, the protagonist had a different name, and the storyline was always basically the same storyline. But, you know, by the time I got to the 6th version, I thought, now I've learned how to write what this book needed to be in order to get published. It had to be first person because it is definitely, you have to feel the soul of this girl or the book is flatter. And so I learned how to do that. I learned how to put myself inside that character and feel the things she felt and do the things she did, you know, and it made all the difference in the world. So I submitted it to my publisher, both books, and my publisher gets back to me and said, you know, you made me cry. I was crying when I read the book. And she said, and now I'm really even crying more because you've got it written in first-person present tense, and we don't publish present tense. I go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So it's the
same
publisher.
They had to change some verbs.
Yeah, it's the same publisher from my Silver Sisters mysteries, and so I was able to say this, and I said, well, listen, did you love it enough that if I rewrite both books in first-person past tense, will you tell me now that you'd be willing to publish it before I do any work? And she said, absolutely. She said, if you rewrite it, I will publish it. And so that's how these books finally came to be published. And let me tell you, rewriting from present to past is not simply changing, you know, is to was. Oh, boy, was that a job. I had no idea what I'd taken on.
Yeah, I was going to say, that has to, because it really changes the structure sufficiently. You have to do a lot of things differently, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, and then certain things affect other things, and it actually, I thought I'd have it, you know, rewritten in a month. Hey, this is a snap, no problem.
Yeah, right.
And it took me about 3.5 months to rewrite the two books.
Yeah, that's understandable. How long are the books?
Well, they're not long books. They're both slightly over 200 pages. And
So the rewrite of 400 pages took 3.5 months. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I literally had to dissect the manuscript and go back in, but still try to preserve the feeling of this young girl who is basically a child of the 50s. I mean, she's from the obedient generation. She doesn't make waves. And all of a sudden, these horrible things happen to her. And she's a delicate person, you know, and and through the books, by the end of, or not even the end, by the middle of the second book, she has found her strength. And this is something that all the reviewers are commenting on, is the odyssey from her being this abused, kidnapped young girl to a very self-confident, you know, woman. And it's not an easy journey for her.
Yeah, and the main character's name is Jeanette Connor.
Right.
And how did you come up with the character? Not just the name, because you mentioned the name has changed several times.
You know, a lot of things are composites. And some of this actually goes back to some stories I knew from the 50s about somebody that a portion of the things happened to. And this person was kidnapped and held in a brothel. And, she did recover physically, but have to find herself. And she did remarry, and her husband was killed in an accident. And or not remarry, she married. And I mean,
right.
This was a person who was a beautiful person whose life was a trail of tragedy until she
right.
got past all these things. And from the time I first heard these things, I think I was about maybe 22 when I first started
uh-huh.
hearing these stories. And
right.
They haunted me. I mean, it was a
sure.
story I had to write. But I had to be able to gain the skills to be able to do it justice. And
mm-hmm.
I'd put it away, and then it would start niggling at me again and say, well,
sure.
what are you going to write my story? You know, you need to tell my story. And, of course, by the second book is a fictionalization totally. I
sure.
mean, it's not the things that happened to this person. It's the uplifting part of things. But there's also
right.
some pretty hefty surprises at the end. And she really does. She runs from Chicago to Los Angeles, and
mm-hmm.
she finds her love, but she also finds some nightmares there. And she finds some people she never expected to see again. And, you know, then it's a question of she's got a thirst for retribution. What's she going to do?
Well, I've got to tell you, although I haven't read the books, they sound as if they would just draw anybody in who would start to read them. And I'm not saying that to shill your book or anything. I'm just saying that it really does sound like a really good suspenseful read, as well as being very involving.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing, Jeff, is when I wrote them, I thought that they would basically be women's literature. And the majority of people who have been my first readers have been men. And the men become very protective of Jen. And they
uh-huh.
really want to follow her life. I mean, they become very involved in it. If you look on my website, I'll be posting some new reviews. And several of the reviews are from men on this. And that's why.
Well, I have to tell you something. You know, I besides the writers group you belong to, I assume you probably belong to a book club or two. And I belong to one, and I will tell you that they've had us read some stuff. I mean, books have been chosen where these are books that I normally wouldn't read yet,
okay.
You know, and some of them might be described as what you were referring to, but in the slang, chick lit. And,
right.
And I've got to tell you, you know, those books, I don't consider myself to be all that much more sensitive than other men particularly. But I have found that almost inevitably those are really enjoyable books. The ones that come to mind are, and I don't know if you've read any of these, but Hotel at the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, and Water for Elephants. Those are the two that come to mind. Both terrific, terrific books. And again, very involving, and neither one of them was a mystery as such. But very good books, and you would assume by reading them, or the stereotype would be that they would appeal primarily to women, and I just don't think that's true anymore. Obviously, if you're talking about children's literature outside of a Harry Potter phenomenon,
right?
Children's literature is not going to appeal to many adults. But beyond that, I think the gender distinctions really have eroded and don't seem to matter that much anymore, unless, of course, you're trying to become a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. As a side note, I was running across last year's Fortune 500 edition, you know, the Fortune magazine that has the
right.
Fortune 500. So that was, the 2009 edition. And they reported that, okay, there's obviously 500 companies in the Fortune 500, and each one has a CEO, one CEO.
Okay.
Out of 500, how many would you guess are women? Now, if it were reflective of the population, obviously it would be 250, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be a much different it's going to be a much different answer than it would have been several years ago. Let's take a, because of the way you said it, let's take a flyer and say 372.
Out of 500? No. And by the way,
or is
the answer
it the other
is,
way? Did it go the
other
way?
Way?
Like maybe 15?
Okay. Worse than that.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I'll give you the number in a minute, but the interesting thing to me is okay, when people say there's no longer a bias, or bias against women doesn't exist as a real issue, Okay, if you have fewer, I mean, if it were 200, you know, versus 250 to be even, you could logically
right.
say, well, you know, it's just a matter of happenstance. We don't need quotas,
sure.
you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but if it's substantially lower than half, it either has to be a result of one of two things. I mean, just talking about logic, not being nice. Logic would say either it's a matter of past or present or both bias, or that women are just less capable of being a CEO than a man is. And I don't believe the second one, and I know you don't either, or I suspect you don't. I don't want to be presumptuous. But clearly it has to be a matter of present or past bias. The answer, by the way, is 7.
Really? Well,
yeah.
See, we would have had 9 a couple of years ago. We would have had Carly Fiorino and Meg Whitman.
Yeah. But at the same time, there were that's
7.
Only if they stayed.
Oh, that's
they weren't
amazing.
Going.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. And how many, and this isn't a truck to challenge you because I know and you don't kind of thing, but just this is stunning. Any guess on how many were African-American? Not African-American women, but just African-American. Take a shot?
No, I can't even.
3.
I was going to say 2, and I thought that would sound too low.
Yeah, well, but not by much. And
wow.
So, again, you get into that same situation. It's just, I just mentioned it because we were talking about women versus men, and not versus, but as contrasted.
Well, you
with
know,
men,
it's interesting.
I
for 5 years, I co-owned a marketing and promotion company.
Okay.
And my partner was an African-American man, very
mm-hmm.
brilliant guy who is no longer with us. And when we set our company up, we were talking, you know, 50-50, and then we thought, well, one of us has to have 51%. So is it better for us to be woman-owned or African-American-owned? And
it's
so we finally went for him having the 51%.
Right. And you're referring to being able to get minority contracts, minority
Well, minority contracts,
contract.
Being able to interact with certain companies that might not even listen to us otherwise. You know,
right.
And it was pretty interesting. But, you know, I come from the era where I was jumping up against that glass ceiling.
Sure.
And that was one of the reasons that one of the little known facts is that my first name is Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
My middle name is Morgan. And
okay.
At that time, so that people wouldn't know if I was a man or a woman when I first contacted them, unless you know, sent a letter or whatever, I dropped my first name. I went by the initial, E. Morgan St. James. And
very
it didn't
good.
Trick. I would get everything was addressed to Dear Mr. St. James. Or
uh-huh.
if I left a telephone message, the callback would say, is your boss in? And I would say, who are you calling for? Well, we're
uh-huh.
calling for Mr. St. James. And I said, well, you have Morgan St. James.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was good. It actually worked very well for me in business. I was the only female on a national staff. And
right.
So I was able to get some very good contracts once they found out that their St. James was a woman, but she was a capable woman who had the answers to all of their questions.
Right, yeah. It's kind of the premise behind it. I never really watched the show, but as I understood the premise, it's kind of the premise behind that TV show, Remington Steele.
Yeah.
She was the woman and detective, but she created this character who essentially was supposed to be the head of the firm, but he's not in, but I can help you kind of thing. And,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, people now that think, women who think they're up against it, they have no idea what it was like in the 70s and 80s.
Sure.
I mean, in the 70s and 80s, a woman was good for going and bringing coffee to the boss.
Right.
You know, that
yeah, which
kind of it.
Yeah, which... Yeah, and I know you're
and
not suggesting
I wasn't good
this,
at that. I used to slop
yeah.
the coffee on the floor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you're not suggesting that women are free from bias now, but you're...
No,
but what
no,
you're
not at
true.
All.
Certainly,
not at all.
It's certainly been worse. Let's get back to you and your books.
Okay.
All
yeah.
right. You mentioned I mentioned the website morganstjames-author.com, but there's also one that is more devoted, I guess, to the Arliss Adams books, which is ARLISS-Adams-author.com. But either way, we'll get you into your books, as will with regard to the Silver Sisters mysteries, silversistermysteries.com. And the sister Silver Sisters, plural, mysteries.com. I was about to emphasize the wrong thing. It is plural, silversistersmysteries.com. So if you want to see Morgan's work and have access to these, that would be the way to do it. And as I mentioned, or she mentioned,
I told everybody not to call so that I wouldn't have a call waiting beep, and I'll bet that's what that beeping is.
You're hearing a beeping, I am not, so undoubtedly that's what you're getting. So I say let them wait for another 9 minutes, but if you would like
absolutely.
To talk more.
Absolutely. I just didn't. I put an email out. Please don't call me during this period
during
of time.
35
because
minute
I don't know how to turn off the call waiting.
Well, for what it's worth, it is not coming through.
Good.
You.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And,
good.
Yeah. And I keep that in mind that when I'm on my cell phone with my wife, that I have to let her know when a call's coming, that I've got a call waiting. Hold on. because she can't hear it, obviously. Yeah, only the actual recipient.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we can get back to this.
back to the books, right. So before I go further, I wanted to mention to you and mention to anyone who's listening to our live broadcast, you can hear Morgan's previous discussion with us. I don't recall the date off the top of my head. Perhaps you do. But if you go to the same website you've gone to and listen to the archived edition, you can get past the first half of the show so you don't have to just listen to me ranting. And start listening to the interview. And since I'm guessing you don't know the date either, but you can find Morgan's episode.
No,
how long ago, roughly?
I have it up on my website under
okay, good.
Interviews. There's a link.
Oh, terrific. Oh, good. Okay. So you can get to us that way, or as I say, get to the show, and you can listen to Morgan's previous appearance, along with all the other past shows. We are now in week 54 of this adventure. In any event, what's next in terms of the Devil's series? You mentioned that the other books
will
not
include. Well, the Devil's series, I haven't obviously started on the third book yet, but in the third book, Jen's sister will come on into play. And she is going to be the primary character in the third book, and Jen will make small appearances in and out. But Judy, who was a Nancy Drew wannabe when she was a kid, and that's in The Devil's Due and Devil's Dance, so we know where Judy's coming from. And she can't resist a mystery, but she is now also married to a Hollywood hot club and has moved to California. So she is the perfect person to carry on the series.
Okay,
and,
now I don't know if anybody else heard it the same way, but it sounded to me like you said she's married to a Hollywood hot tub.
No, they're probably frolicking in the hot tub, but
yes.
No, to a Hollywood heartthrob.
Heartthrob, that's so much better.
Yes. A screen idol. The woman,
okay.
The man everybody hungers for.
I see.
You know, this one does have romance in it, and I mean, this series has romance.
Right.
It does have a little bit of violence in it. Like I said, it's much edgier than the Silver Sisters.
And so people know the Silver Sisters mysteries, which we talked about last time, are more kind of comic mysteries. I guess you would call them.
Yes, we call them comical crime capers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, you can go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, and people can find the Silver Sisters Mysteries, both, as I mentioned, silversistersmysteries.com and morganstjames-author.com. Go ahead with what you were going to say, please.
Right. No, I was just going to say that all of my books, except for a Kindle-only anthology that I just put up recently called Women on the Edge, but all of my other books are available in every format. They're in trade paperback, Kindle, ebook, audio CD, MP3. I mean, if you want to listen to my books or hear them or read them or whatever, you can find a way to do it.
Just for curiosity, did you read the books yourself for the purposes of the recording?
No. The audio books, I have a different publisher for the audio books. They're published by Books in Motion. And Books in Motion is represented very heavily in libraries. Libraries carry a lot of Books in Motion audio books. On these two books, the narrator is Andrea Bates, And Andrea was also the narrator on Seven Deadly Samovars. The narrator on A Corpse in the Soup was Stephanie Brush. And we loved Stephanie, but unfortunately she moved to Prague, and that would be a little bit of a long haul to go into Books in Motion Studios to record the book. So, but no, Andrea, she does all the accents, you know, she does all the different voices and everything, and I would never presume, I'm a good reader, but I would never presume to be the narrator on my own books, and one of the executives from Books in Motion put it very, very well. She said, a good narrator can make a poor book sound good, but a bad narrator can kill a wonderful book.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
And
I'm
so
sure that's true.
When they do audiobooks, you know, they look at them differently than the print publishers do. They look at what will make good dialogue and what will make good characters for an audio presentation.
Sure. Well, it's almost like a, I mean, it's not, but it is similar to, in some ways, a radio play.
Yes, yes, very much so. Very much so. In fact, now, having said that, I found a new writer that I really, really liked, and his name is Spider Robinson, and it was an audio book that I took out, and it's called Very Bad Deaths, D-E-A-T-H-S, and Spider Robinson, I was very surprised to find out, narrated his own book, and he was wonderful, and I don't know if he has an acting background, but I would have never guessed it was the author narrating the book.
Yeah, it is obviously a different skill set, and there are some people, obviously, who can write and act, if you want to call that acting. But not most writers, I would assume, make poor actors, and most actors probably make poor writers. But there are some people who do have both skills and talents, and so that can be done. If I recall correctly, and I may be wrong, Stephen King did a couple of his own audiobooks, and I don't know how that worked out, and I have to confess something to you. I have never, ever listened to a book.
Really?
Honest.
Well, a lot of people haven't, you know, but with my situation, I gave up flying back and forth between L.A. and Las Vegas because it takes me longer to fly than it does to drive by the time I go through all the stuff at the airport. So
same thing with Phoenix and L.A., yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I just put in an audio book and off I go. And that way I get to really expand the books that, you know, I've been exposed to. The time just flies by, and I always take an extra audio book, though, in case I don't like the one that I've taken for the trip. Seriously.
Yeah. Backup, yeah. Yeah.
No.
It's straight. I tend to listen to Sirius radio and talk shows when I'm on the road between the two because same thing. You want the time to pass and you want to be engaged in something. It's never occurred to me to do a book. Maybe that's something to try. And by the way, we have 1 minute left, so those of you who might be interested in calling can't. But we would like to have you on again when the book is actually coming out in October or in November when the audiobook comes out. We can talk
more
about
both of those. Oh, that would be wonderful. And, you know, I think you've discovered I'm a fairly prolific author. I have three other books in work right now at various stages. Three.
Wow.
One is a Silver Sisters that's being edited. One is a new one by Arliss Adams that is not part of the Twist of Fate series. And one is a real fun book called Confessions of a Cougar.
We'll talk about those and more the next time you join us. Next week, we'll be joined by Joe Traum. Thank you, Morgan, alias Arliss. We're essentially out of time, so I'll let you go. Just say some goodbyes afterwards, but we'll talk again. Thank you so much.
Pleasure as always, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Ditto. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay.
And for those of you who have not hung up on me yet, now you have to listen to me for about 40 seconds. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to our lovely producer, the local Chihuahua, Autumn Bushman. And hope you join us next week, as I was saying, with Joe Traum. We'll be talking not about his book very much, but we'll be talking about real estate, adventures in real estate development. That's actually much more interesting than it sounds, I promise. And Please join us next time. Tell your friends. Warn your enemies. Listen to us live if you're listening to us in archive. 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. Meantime, see you next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.